Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Super Bowl weekend, Saturday and Sunday. We're going to combining these 2 days into one commentary, so a Super Bowl commentary and a Super Bowl weekend commentary, and I hope everybody's doing well out there. It's an absolutely beautiful, weekend here in North Texas. We've got a couple of topics we're going to get into today. The first one is Vice President Harris and a post that I have over at the American Thinker Saturday morning. And the other one is I've got a few thoughts on the Super Bowl happening on Sunday. So let's get into our commentary with Vice President Harris. Again, I have a post over at the American Thinker Saturday morning. And you can also, by the way, catch that post if you follow me on Babaloo, the Cuban-American blog out of Miami. That post will be there as well. That'll be on Saturday night, but you can catch it over the weekend as well. What's happening with Vice President Harris is that there's a great deal of concern or dissatisfaction within the Democrat Party about the way she's doing her job as vice president. And it sort of hit the fan a few days ago when the New York Times ran a story about concerns within the party. And they were quoting people. Now, of course, a lot of these people would not give out their names because that's what always happens. But the story was raising a lot of concerns about her abilities and her handling of the job as vice president. For example, concerns about the way she would deal with staff, her ability to study the issues or to present herself in a favorable way. And all of this, you know, pretty much is starting to add up. And a lot of Democrats are very concerned that she may be the nominee in 2024. Now, of course, as vice president, if something were to happen to the president, well, then she becomes the president automatically then, and you would assume she'd be running for re-election in 2024 or for election for the first time in 2024. But the real concern, I think, with the Democrats is that she is the nominee, and somehow they have to take it away from her because that would, of course, create a lot of identity politics problems within the party. Remember, she was selected. Vice President Harris was selected for one reason and one reason only. And that's because she was an African-American woman. And basically, Biden was told, you have to put an African-American woman on the ticket. You have no choice. So they selected Kamala Harris, who, of course, was a senator from California. Now, the problems that she's having are just the way she presents herself. Her knowledge of issues. She seems unserious when you see her talking about issues, and she seems to be doing all these little appearances where you know she's always laughing and just doesn't present herself in a very serious manner. Now, one of the opportunities I think that she missed completely was the situation on the border. She was given the job of the border person. I mean, President Biden basically put her in, said she's going to be my border person, my border, whatever, SAR or whatever the word they use. And I thought, what an amazing opportunity for her to excel, for her to get into an issue that was, that continues to be a very tough issue for the Biden administration. So, you know, I was expecting her to treat this in a totally different way. Instead, she went to Central America and made a bunch of basically photo appearances with the leaders of certain countries. She was talking about the root issues of the problem of immigration. Of course, there's the root issue. The root issue is that Central America is a poor area. So if people in Central America have an opportunity, of course, they're going to come to the United States. That's always been that way. The reason they didn't come before is because we had a tougher border policy. So the root causes is a part of the problem. But the real problem on the border, of course, is the criminality, the humanitarian crisis, the fact that you have people coming in record numbers And she decided not to do anything about that. She hasn't even been to the border. She went to El Paso and made another stop, I think, somewhere else. But she's never actually come down to the border itself and, let's say, walked around with some of the Border Patrol people and actually, you know, sat down with the mayors or the politicians of some of those areas. So I just thought she blew it here. She had the opportunity of a lifetime to show her concern for a very important issue and to show some leadership and that she could actually be president of the United States. And I think she blew it completely. And I think a lot of Democrats are beginning to pick up on that. Now, she's also had some troubles with her staff. This is another thing that goes around, how difficult apparently she is to get along with. And her staff, there's a lot of turnover on her staff. That's another problem. Many people remember her campaign from 2020. I think a lot of Democrats do. And they're looking at that campaign and they're going, wait a minute, this lady was not very good when she was campaigning. In fact, she never even got to a primary, despite having a lot of money and a lot of backing from major Democrats. And of course, overall, there's just a lot of concerns about her leadership. So when you look at her, and if you're a Democrat, you're looking at her and you're going, wait a minute, this is not the person we want to be, let's say, the quarterback for the team in 2024 if we have to replace Joe Biden. And, you know, the situation with Joe Biden is sort of up in the air. He says he's running. He may run. He may. I don't know. I personally don't think that he will. But, you know, what does that mean? But if he does, then is he going to select her again as vice president? That's another issue. But if Mr. Biden, President Biden, does not run, then who becomes the nominee? And I think you see a lot of people like Governor Newsom of California, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Wouldn't be surprised if she jumps in. Wouldn't be surprised if Senator Sanders jumps in. I think a lot of people are concerned about Kamala Harris and would go after Kamala Harris directly in a primary or in a debate if she was, or Vice President Harris was running for president. So a lot of concerns about the Vice President Harris, and the concerns are coming from the Democrats, not from Republicans, but they're coming from Democrats who are really worried about the fact that this lady may in fact be their nominee in 2024. So check out my post. And by the way, I also did a podcast with my good friend Frank Burke. That podcast is available on the Blog Talk Radio side. And you can click that or listen to that. Normally on my blog, on the right-hand side, there's a list of the podcast, and you can check that out as well. We got into a lot of detail with Frank. Frank, of course, is a man with a lot of managerial experience. And he looked at Vice President Harris from a managerial standpoint, and I thought made some very interesting remarks about her situation. Well, the other big story this weekend, of course, is the Super Bowl happening on Sunday between Kansas City and Philadelphia. I think Kansas City is going to win. It's just a personal choice because the quarterback for Kansas City is a Texas Tech graduate, Patrick Mahomes, and I just want to see Texas win, I guess, just to put it that way. But I have a post coming out Sunday morning about the Super Bowl and sharing some Super Bowl memories, because one of the things that is unique about the Super Bowl in me is that I've seen all of them. You know, I've been around long enough to see each and every one of them, and I've got a few thoughts about them. Of course, the Super Bowl started with Green Bay and Kansas City back in 1967. The first two, they were not even called a Super Bowl back then, but the first two, the Green Bay Packers defeated Kansas City and Oakland. They were not very good games. The Packers were the Kansas City and Oakland were completely overwhelmed by the Packers, who happened to be one of the greatest teams of all time. But the Super Bowl really took on the image of the Super Bowl in Super Bowl III, when the Jets beat the Colts, and that was one of the great upsets in sports history. And I was kind of hoping that the Jets would win because, you know, Joe Namath was the quarterback and everybody in our school was crazy about Joe Namath. So I was kind of rooting for Joe Namath, but that was quite an upset And I think it really made the Super Bowl relevant because it made the AFL relevant. That's the other thing. A lot of people were concerned that the NFL and the AFL were not on the same plane. Well, after the Jets beat the Colts, and then the next year, Kansas City beat Minnesota, it was quite clear at that point that the two leagues had at least very good teams that could compete in the Super Bowl. And then you had a streak of games in the 1970s, the ones that I remember the most, 1973, when the Miami Dolphins defeated the Washington Redskins, and it was the end of a perfect season for Miami. Miami is still the only team in NFL history to go perfect through the season and through the Super Bowl. Then you had my favorite of all the Super Bowls, number 13, and that was between the Cowboys and the Steelers, and that was such a great game. Two great teams competing. Could have gone either way that game, but those were just two great games between the Cowboys and the Steelers. And the Steelers won that one, but it was a great game. If you get a chance to watch it on these replays that they do on ESPN Classic or the NFL Channel, catch it because it's really a great game. Number 13 between the Cowboys and the Steelers. And then the 1980s came, and frankly, for much of the 1980s and into the early 1990s, the Super Bowl was kind of boring because you had a lot of blowouts. And the AFC at the time was very weak compared to the NFC, so you just had a lot of blowouts, not very interesting games. It became interesting again in 1991 when the Giants beat the Bills at the last minute in a field goal. And then over the last 10 years or so, there have been some pretty good games, but clearly Tom Brady and the Manning brothers, you know, Eli and Peyton Manning and Tom Brady have been sort of the quarterbacks of that time, leading their teams to Super Bowl victories. Here recently, of course, you have Patrick Mahomes with Kansas City, Aaron Rodgers with Green Bay, and, you know, just some great quarterbacks that have come out of the Super Bowl history. So a great game. I'm looking forward to it. Like most of you, I'll probably be eating and enjoying the Super Bowl and doing a lot of eating. That's what we do on Super Bowl Sunday. So I just want to wish all of you a happy Super Bowl Sunday. Don't eat too much, because remember, you got to get up Monday morning and get back to your routine. But, you know, eat a little bit. It's okay to eat a little bit. But just enjoy your Super Bowl Sunday. And I think it's become really a national holiday, Super Bowl Sunday, and I've got no problems with that because it is a great tradition. And as I said at the beginning, I've seen all of them, which is kind of nice. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Enjoy your Super Bowl, and we'll talk about serious stuff again on Monday when we chat with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bye-bye, everybody. Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, February the 6th, and welcome to our commentary. I got to make a little correction about something I said the other day. I want to thank my friend Nestor, who watches our show, and I want to thank him for correcting me. You know, the other day I said, in reference to the balloon that was up in the air, the white balloon that we shot down on Saturday, I made a reference to Sputnik. And Sputnik was, of course, the Soviet satellite that went up in 1957 that really shook up public opinion around the world, because nobody expected the Soviets to do that, or the Russians. So they put Sputnik up in the air, and I said during the video that Sputnik was the size of an orange or a grapefruit. Well, my good friend Nestor sent me an email saying, no, it wasn't really the size of an orange. It was more like the size of a beach ball. So that's a lot bigger, obviously, than a grapefruit. So thanks to Nestor for the correction that Sputnik was not the size of an orange or a grapefruit. It was actually the size of a beach ball, so a little bit bigger to say the least. Well, we're going to be talking a lot about the balloon with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We'll be doing our weekly podcast later Monday, and that will be up on the blog late afternoon, early evening. You can catch it on my blog or over on the website at Blog Talk Radio, or if you have Twitter now, you can watch it over there. I've been posting on Twitter here the last month or so, ever since Elon Musk bought Twitter. I'm following Twitter. So far, it's interesting. We'll see if, you know, how Twitter develops over time. So today, the Week in Review with my good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Well, I have a post over at the American Thinker that I want to bring to your attention in the morning. A post about Beto O'Rourke. I'm sure all of you remember Beto O'Rourke. He ran for governor, ran for the U.S. Senate, even ran for president. In the last 5 years, you know, this man has run for three offices. He ran against Senator Cruz in 2018. Actually, that was a great campaign that he ran in 2018. He came very close to winning that campaign against Senator Cruz. And then in 2020, he decided to run for president, and that turned out to be a disaster, even though he had a great start in that nomination. And then in 2022, he was just defeated by Governor Abbott by 10, 11, 12 points here in Texas. Well, I bring up Beto O'Rourke because he has just been signed up to teach a few classes up at the University of Chicago. Now, I wish him well. I wish him well. I think we need to hear from a lot of different people, and he's one of the many people we have to hear from. I guess he's gonna teach a class on American politics. So we'll see what he has to say. I suggested some topics to Beto in my post, like for example, should a candidate for the U.S. Senate receive so much money from outside his home state? Should a candidate for the presidency make a bunch of outrageous statements like I'm going to take your AR-15 away and so on? So I suggested a few topics. The course will be, I guess, this spring at the University of Chicago. So if you're up there and you take the class, I wish you well. And send me a note and tell me what you think of his class. You know, he's a pretty dynamic fellow, so I'm sure he can be a good speaker and have a good class. So we wish him well. But as I wrote, I am actually happy that he's a professor at the University of Chicago. I'd rather have Beto O'Rourke teaching at the University of Chicago than serving as our U.S. senator, our U.S. governor, and God forbid, candidate for president of the United States. So good luck to Beto O'Rourke. Well, February the 6th is a fascinating day to remember two of the most interesting personalities of the last 100 years. One is Ronald Reagan, and the other one is Babe Ruth. Now, of course, Ronald Reagan and Babe Ruth, Reagan in politics, Ruth in baseball, were both born on this day, February the 6th. Ruth was born in 1895 in Baltimore, and he became, of course, the great baseball player. And Reagan was born in Tampico, Illinois. A lot of people don't know that. He was actually born in Illinois. Most people associate Reagan with California, but he lived in California most of his life, of course. He was governor of California as well. But he was actually born in Tampico, Illinois, which is, I don't know where that is, but it's a small town somewhere in Illinois. And these two men, besides sharing a birthday, these two men, I think, were great achievers, and they both came into the picture, Ruth in the early 1920s and Reagan in the 1970s, the 1980s. And they both came into the picture, and they had a lot to do with saving their industry. Ruth came in 1920, and he was originally with the Red Sox, and he was traded to the Yankees, but it was with the Yankees that he became the big player that we know him as. And in fact, Ruth, really by all accounts, he saved the game of baseball. The game of baseball had a terrible scandal in the 1919 season with the White Sox and the Mafia and organized crime and stuff like that. And the game was on the verge of collapse. financially, that is. And Babe Ruth came in, started hitting home runs, and the parks were full again. So Babe Ruth literally saved the game of baseball by putting people back in the seats, which is what he did quite well. He would sell out many places wherever he would play. Ronald Reagan became president in 1980, and I would argue saved the country from all of the terrible policies of the 70s. But also, it wasn't just the policies. It was the negativity that we had in the late 70s, that terrible time in the late 70s. And Reagan came in the 1980s. He put some policies in place. But his biggest achievement, and I'll say this over and over and over again, his biggest achievement was turning around American public opinion, making Americans feel happy again about their country. Patriotism came back, and the flag, and there was a great deal of pride in the U.S. military, and all of that because of Reagan's, not just his policies, but his amazing ability to communicate a message to the American people. So I've always argued that Ronald Reagan and Babe Ruth, in many ways, saved Reagan the politics, and Ruth, of course, the game of baseball. And they were both great personalities. You might argue that Ruth was a little bit more exciting, you might say, maybe a little bit more eccentric than Ronald Reagan. But nevertheless, they were both great personalities in their fields. And as I say, baseball and Babe Ruth are synonymous. And I think politics and Ronald Reagan, particularly communications in Ronald Reagan, are phenomenal. You know, Ronald Reagan changed the way presidents communicate. And every president since Reagan has followed. For example, the way he would deliver the State of the Union by pointing out somebody in the audience. That started with Reagan. And every president since has followed that tradition. So we remember today, Babe Ruth, born on this day in 1895. He passed away very young in 1948. He died of cancer. And Ronald Reagan, who was born on this day in 1911, passed away in 2004. Just both great personalities of our times. This week, we also remember the Beatles, because it was this week in 1964 that what came to be known as Beatlemania really hit the United States. First of all, it started with the song, I Want to Hold Your Hand, that became number one this week on Billboard. And for the next 3 months, a song by the Beatles was number one on Billboard. I mean, it was amazing. The domination of the radio and the charts, the charts that we saw with the Beatles was something that we had not seen really since Elvis. Began this week in 1964 with the song, I Want to Hold Your Hand, that became number one on Billboard USA and across the country. You know, radio stations at the time were playing nothing but the Beatles. The fans could not get enough of the Beatles. And you had, several Beatles albums that were released really in the first half of 1964. And then, of course, that movie, A Hard Day's Night, was released in the summer of 64. But it all started this week with I Want to Hold Your Hand, and something also very important that happened this week and the Beatles. And that's when the Beatles were on the Ed Sullivan Show. They were on the Ed Sullivan Show February the 9th. And that was one of the most amazing television shows ever. According to what I've read, something like 70% of the television sets in the United States were watching the Beatles. Now, remember, it's a totally different time than it is now. Back in 1964, there was generally one television in the house. Usually you had a television set in your living room if you had a family, or if you had an apartment or something, you might have it in your bedroom or whatever. But there was one television per house. And to have 70% of the television sets, watching the Beatles, I mean, that was an amazing. I don't think we've ever had that kind of penetration before. We've had larger audiences in terms of people watch, let's say, a Super Bowl or a World Series game or maybe a World Cup game, particularly international audiences. But in the United States, that night, the Ed Sullivan Show had just the most amazing share of the television audience in the United States. And that night, they had two performances on the Ed Sullivan Show. And by all accounts, everybody who saw them was turned on by the Beatles. And the people who were lucky enough to get in, you know, even today they'll talk about the energy that was in that hall where Ed Sullivan used to do his show. So we remember Ronald Reagan, who was born on February the 6th. We remember Babe Ruth, who was born on February the 6th. And we remember the Beatles this week in 1964. And the amazing thing called Beatlemania that just dominated the country for a long time. I mean, it was just remarkable the impact that they had on music that year. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Don't forget to catch our interview with Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We'll have that on the blog all week. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a great day from Dallas, Texas.